Welcome to the Poll Closure Report National Press Call. My name is Darrell, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Kristen Voorhees. Kristen, you may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining our national press call on our recently released report, Democracy Diverted, Polling Place Closures and the Right to Vote. The report details the detrimental impacts that polling place closures have on historically disenfranchised communities, especially communities of color, voters with disabilities, and other populations that already face notable levels of discrimination. It also urges journalists, advocates, and voters to use this data to scrutinize the impact of poll closures in their respective communities, to understand their impact on voters of color, and to create a more just electoral system for all. Today, we will hear from the following experts: Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference Education Fund; John Cusick, Litigation Fellow at the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund; Michelle Bishop, Disability Advocacy Specialist for Voting Rights at the National Disability Rights Network; Beth Stevens, Voting Rights Program Director at the Texas Civil Rights Project; and Sean Young, Legal Director at ACLU of Georgia. After we hear from our speakers, we will open it up for questions from the media, and our operator will provide instructions on how to submit questions. It is now my pleasure to turn it over to Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference Education Fund. Vinita?
Thank you, Kristen. Good afternoon, everyone. As Kristen said, I'm Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference Education Fund, an organization that builds public will for federal policies that promote and protect the civil and human rights of all people in the United States. A few hours ago, I testified before Congress about restoring the Voting Rights Act through H.R. 4, the Voting Rights Advancement Act. I told our lawmakers about a groundbreaking new report released today by the Education Fund called Democracy Diverted, Polling Place Closures and the Right to Vote. As the title suggests, the report focuses on the pernicious use of polling place closures as a tactic to disenfranchise voters, particularly voters of color, older voters, rural voters, and voters with disabilities. The Voting Rights Act has long been considered one of the most successful civil rights pieces of legislation Congress has ever passed. But 6 years ago, five justices on the Supreme Court decided Shelby County versus Holder. That ruling gutted Section 5, the preclearance provision of the Voting Rights Act that for decades blocked racially discriminatory voting practices. Under Section 5, states with a demonstrated record of racial discrimination were required to submit all proposed voting changes to the Department of Justice or the federal courts for preclearance in advance of implementation. States were required to prove that the proposed voting change would not deny or adversely affect the right to vote based on race or language. Preclearance was a crucial element of the Voting Rights Act because it ensured that no new voting law or practice, such as closing or moving a polling place, would be implemented unless the law was first determined not to discriminate against voters of color. Our report analyzes polling place closures in 757 of the 861 counties once covered under the preclearance system. There's a lot of data in the report and a lot of charts with all the primary source material as well that I would urge all of you to look at as you're combing through. I just want to share a few of our findings, some of which are fairly alarming. So staggering 1,688 polling places were closed in 13 states between 2012 and 2018. Between the 2014 and 2018 midterm elections, we found 1,173 fewer polling places in 2018, despite an increase in voter turnout. And overall, Texas alone closed 750 polling places. Arizona closed 320. Georgia closed 214, with other states trailing close behind. Decisions to shutter polling places are often made pretty quietly and without public notice, making intervention virtually possible. And this is part of the problem. Without preclearance protection, states are under no obligation to evaluate the discriminatory impacts of such closures. But as we found, these closures have a cascading effect, causing long lines at the polling places, transportation hurdles, denials of language assistance, and mass confusion about where eligible voters may cast their ballots. For many people, these burdens make it harder and sometimes impossible to vote. some polling place closures may be valid, and there may be a legitimate justification for closures to happen, but we have to recognize that often the very same states that are closing polling places are also pushing discriminatory voting measures, including barriers to registration, voter purges from the rolls, and vote photo ID requirements. And the lack of preclearance allows there to states to do close polling sites without adequate study about the racial impact of those closures, and often without sufficient notice to the community. But this larger constellation of discrimination at the ballot box, coupled with the sheer number of closures identified in our report, demands immediate action. And it's why the Leadership Conference has been urging Congress to pass the Voting Rights Advancement Act, or H.R. 4, to restore the preclearance system of the VRA and ensure that we've got the tools we need to address racial discrimination in voting. Our closing is just that the Education Fund is going to continue to ensure a future where elections are fair, free, and accessible for all, and want to see the day when H.R. 4 becomes the law of the land. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanita. Now we will hear from John Cusick of the NAACP LDS.
Thank you, Kristen and Vanita. My name is John Cusick, and I'm a litigation fellow at the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, also known as LDF. For nearly 80 years, LDF has worked at the national, state, and local levels to pursue racial justice and eliminate structural barriers for African-American people in the areas of criminal justice, economic justice, education, and political participation. The harm flowing from the devastating 2013 Supreme Court decision in Shelby v. Holder, a case that LDF litigated and gutted the preclearance requirement under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, was unfortunately predictable. We continue to see a breadth of voting changes on large and small scales that are damaging to communities of color across our country. Each year post-Shelby, voter suppression has intensified at the local, state, and federal levels, and the right to vote for African-American voters and other racial minority voters is facing its greatest threat in decades. LDF has witnessed this suppression firsthand through our litigation and nonpartisan election protection efforts. For decades, LDF, through our Prepare to Vote initiative, has marshaled staff and local volunteers to protect the abilities of voters, particularly voters of color, to participate in the political process. LDF staff and trained volunteers are on the ground year after year to monitor polling sites in both primary and general elections. For example, in 2018, during the midterm elections, we were present in 8 states, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Missouri, South Carolina, Texas, and then Mississippi for the special election Senate. Through this, we observed and responded to voting irregularities or instances of discrimination, such as polling place changes, which have increased with an alarming frequency in the last 6 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. Polling place changes often fly under the radar prior to Election Day. They can be benign, but they can also be harmful to communities of color, underscoring the need for the documentation and reports like Democracy Diverted. In Grady County, Georgia, in 2018, for example, we witnessed a polling closure with no real notice to voters, leaving community members to sit outside and redirect their other voters to proper polling places. Along with partners, LDF also identified notice and transparency issues in Albany, Macon, Bibb, and Jeff Davis counties in Georgia. Equally troubling, time and time again, we see counties consider or adopt polling place changes that make it harder for racial minority voters to cast a ballot, based on cost-saving measures or as an end runaround to ADA compliance that requires making polling places accessible for voters who have a disability, as was the case when Randolph County considered a proposal to close 7 of 9 polling locations in areas where African-American residents constituted more than 60% of the population. But it's not just Georgia. As the Leadership Conference's Democracy Diverted report shows, polling place changes are happening at an alarming rate in jurisdictions previously covered by Section 5, like Louisiana and Mississippi. Similarly, outside of these jurisdictions, in places like Dodge City, Kansas, voting was limited to one polling location, which was outside of a town and inaccessible via public transportation. The nearest bus stop was more than 1 mile away, and at times freight trains in the area blocked traffic, slowing access to the polls. Not every polling place change is bad, but every change must be scrutinized to study, analyze, and publicly identify the negative impact, especially when racial minority, low-income, elderly, or voters with disabilities are likely to bear the brunt of the burden of those changes. It also must be preceded by adequate notice opportunities for communities to propose alternative places that keep voting accessible and hospitable. Through notice, communities can illuminate how polling place changes interact with disparities in transportation. In places like Albany, Georgia, there is little to no public transportation, so closing 4 or 5 polling locations, as they attempted to do in 2013 after Shelby, is effectively vote denial. This report, along with many others, shows why it is imperative that Congress act swiftly to remedy the failures of our election system and to combat the growing record of discriminatory voting changes. A case-by-case review is a resource drain, and voters simply lose out in the end. It is our collective duty to ensure that the right to vote is free from racial discrimination and that voters have equal, meaningful, and non-burdensome access to the right to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Next, we will hear from Michelle Bishop, Disability Advocacy Specialist for Voting Rights at the National Disability Rights Network. Michelle?
Good afternoon. First, I'd like to thank the Leadership Conference Education Fund for building on their work with the 2016 report, The Great Poll Closure. So little attention is called to the issue of polling place closures in the public eye, and yet it's so unnoticed administrative details, like allocation of polling places, that have profound impact on the ability of all Americans to access. Said, I'd like to quickly call attention to one particular polling places on people with disabilities. This issue, as you heard, applies with the ADA.
It seems like Michelle is getting a little bit of bad cell reception, so we're just going to move on to Beth Stevens, and then we can come back to Michelle's remarks afterwards. So I'll maybe give you Beth Stevens of the Texas Civil Rights Project. Beth?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being on this call, and thank you so much to our colleagues at the Leadership Conference for releasing this report. As Kristen said, my name is Beth Stevens, and I am the Voting Rights Legal Director with the Texas Civil Rights Project. At TCRP, we are Texas Lawyers for Texas Communities, and we use litigation and legal advocacy to promote and advance the civil rights of communities across the state. Our voting rights program focuses primarily on tackling systemic issues that suppress democratic participation in Texas. And as we know well, Texas has a long and dark history of voter suppression. In fact, Texas is at the forefront of inventing new ways to suppress the vote, ways that other states often imitate. That's why it is so vital to fight the fight that we are fighting here. And although the Voting Rights Act substantially slowed this pattern in Texas for many years, Texas has reverted back to their form since the Supreme Court's decision in Shelby County. They've enacted a host of measures that sharply restrict the right to vote. These measures include polling place closures, which are among the most pernicious changes because the people enacting those changes often count on no one noticing when they make the changes, because those decisions are often made so many months before an actual election. One stark example comes from Central Texas in McLennan County, which is home to Waco. An estimated 26% of McLennan County's population is Hispanic, and an estimated 15% is Black, and the county continues to diversify. And we've seen from data pulled for this report that from 2012 to 2018, with the Shelby County decision intervening in 2013, McLennan County closed 30 of its 59 polling locations, cutting the total number of locations that they had in half and affecting an untold number of voters in that county. Make no mistake, these polling place closures are a real barrier to voting. Voters often don't hear that a long-used polling location near their home has closed until Election Day, forcing them to make disruptive changes that are on the spur of the moment to work schedules, child care plans, and transportation arrangements. And it's a choice that so often falls on the most vulnerable voters, thereby reinforcing existing power structures and sending a message to these voters that they are less important than other voters. Additionally, advocates like those at the Texas Civil Rights Project who seek to ensure that elections are accessible to every eligible voter are forced to play this terrible game of whack-a-mole by either, one, trying to fix the problem of polling place closures after an election has already begun, because that's when it becomes evident to the public at large that there's something wrong, or two, attempting to monitor the decisions of 254 different counties across our state and the decisions that are made for each election on which polling locations will remain open and which will close. Ultimately, what we need are greater safeguards so that the burden of monitoring the behavior of politicians falls on the federal government and not on the voters who are trying to live their lives and care for their own family. The Voting Rights Advancement Act would be a huge step in the right direction and help ease the strain on affected voters. When the Voting Rights Advancement Act is passed, it will be a great day of progress for the United States and Texas alike. In the meantime, PCRP will continue to monitor counties across the state and hold politicians accountable when their decisions regarding polling location closures and other voting rights issues run afoul of the law, and when they target communities of color and other marginalized groups to dilute their voting power. And we'll use this report from the leadership conference as one of our tools to do this. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Beth. We're going to turn it back over to Michelle Bishop. And Michelle, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So sorry about that. So, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted myself, we haven't found any real evidence of accessibility surveys or collaboration with the disability rights community in Randolph County. And that is often the case when the ADA is being used as a smokescreen. Democracy Diverted calls even more attention to this issue by diving into poll closures in other counties as well. For instance, Pearl River, Mississippi, attempted to close a large number of polling places that were allegedly inaccessible, during which an election commissioner openly admitted that the committee did not even understand the ADA. And that's the real point to drive home here. Elections officials are not experts in disability rights law, accessibility, or ADA compliance. In fact, given their already burdensome job duties, it would be ridiculous to even expect them to be. The trick we have found in ensuring polling place compliance with the ADA relies on bringing in actual disability rights advocates from the community to assist in serving polling places and making recommendations to make them fully accessible while avoiding polling place closures. Temporary solutions like portable ramps, propping doors open, and using orange cones to create more accessible parking spaces are often all it takes to keep polling places open for voters. And disability rights organizations exist in every state, district, and territory in the U.S. to assist elections officials in doing so. NDIA's in particular to assist in making voting accessible to people with disabilities. And NDRN, the National Disability Rights Network, has actually been researching this issue independently as well. We looked at counties with a reputation for post-Shelby poll closures, much like this report, as well as jurisdictions that have reached a settlement with the Department of Justice within the last several years to conduct investigations from the ADA compliance. We found overwhelmingly that the ADA and the DOJ enforcement of the ADA are not responsible for closure of polling places. If anything, they've led to creative solutions that make existing polling places work for all voters by making them fully accessible, which they should have been in the first place, lest we forget. This fall, NDRN will release a public report on our findings, diving deeper into this issue. And until then, I say to jurisdictions that blame the ADA and people with disabilities for poll closures, that people with disabilities will not back down from demanding full enforcement of the ADA, making all of America's polling places accessible, and ending voter suppression in all its forms. We know that our allies across civil rights movements will stand with us in solidarity, and we will not be silent when any marginalized voters are being challenged or suppressed. The Voting Rights Act must be fully restored. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Lastly, we'll hear from Sean Young, Legal Director at ACLU of Georgia. Sean?
Hi, my name is Sean Young. I am the Legal Director of the ACLU of Georgia. The ACLU of Georgia is committed to protecting the civil rights and civil liberties of Georgians all across the state. Our elections officials in Georgia are supposed to defend and protect our democracy, but instead, many have been aggressively pushing poll closures in communities of color with phony pretexts. The ACLU of Georgia has had to block discriminatory polling place closures in Fulton County, Irwin County, and along with its partners, Randolph County, which we have heard so much about. But those are only three counties out of 159 in Georgia. The ACLU of Georgia is working on turning the tide. Thanks to the work of its partners and the ACLU of Georgia, we have managed to reopen polling places in Valdosta and Jeff Davis counties. But again, those are just two polling places out of hundreds that have closed in the last decade. We have seen this story before. For the last 150 years, states have always come up with seemingly neutral justifications for restricting the sacred constitutional right to vote, which end up discriminating against Black and other communities of color. This supplemental report released by the Leadership Conference is so important because I think it lays bare the justifications that government officials have put forward and how wanting they are. We've heard the excuse of cost for years, and that has always been an excuse to close polling places, but you cannot put a price on democracy. And taxpayers should be rightfully angry when politicians fail to use those same taxes to eliminate four-hour-long lines on Election Day, for instance. We should ask why our county commissioners are failing to provide enough resources. Now, under the ADA, which has been talked about already on this call, the solution to ADA compliance issues is to comply with the ADA. ADA compliance is inexpensive. And another question that we should be asking is, you know, a lot of times they use ADA to justify these closures, and they like to shine a spotlight on run-down facilities in lower-income communities and communities of color. But it's always funny how these run-down buildings always seem to be in lower-income communities. And we don't know why, and we think people should be asking why wealthy people have easier access to up-to-code facilities compared to lower-income folks. And we have also seen school safety be raised as a current specific. We've also seen school safety being raised as a concern, particularly in Georgia. As the report states, the simple solution to school safety concerns is to make Election Day a holiday. And it remains unclear why politicians are unwilling to make that easy fix. And lastly, we have started to see a movement towards vote centers. And in Georgia, that hasn't happened yet, but there are those who are pushing for it. However well-intentioned, vote centers result in polling place closures. And any attempt to create these so-called vote centers should include a thorough analysis of the discriminatory impact that closing polling places will have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean, and thank you so much to all of our speakers. We will now open it up for questions from the press. Also available for taking questions about the report are the authors of the report, Lee Chapman, Voting Rights Program Director, and LaShawn Warren, Senior Vice President of Campaigns and Programs here at the Leadership Conference Education Fund. If you have a question for a specific speaker or one of our experts, please indicate so when you introduce yourself. Operator, please advise press on how to submit questions for our speakers.
If anyone has a question, you can press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Once again, if you have a question, you can press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And I'm standing by for questions. And we have a question from Mike Ludwig. Mike, you can go ahead with your question.
Hi, this is Mike Ludwig with Truth Out. Thanks for having the call. I suppose this is for the report's authors. The report said that there was a significant increase in voter participation or turnout during this time. Do you mean in the 13 states that are covered in this report and by the pre-clearance section, or in general across the country?
Sure. This is Lee Chapman, Voting Rights Program Director. So our report looked at polling place closures from 2012 to 2018, and we found that there were 1,688 closures. But between the time period of the 2014 midterm election and the 2018 midterm election, we saw over 1,173 closures. And we all know that the 2018 election had record turnout across the country. So despite record turnout, we saw fewer polling places in the jurisdictions that were previously covered by Section 5.
Okay, thanks.
And our next question comes from Nicole Terry Ellis. You can go ahead with your question.
Hi, this is Nicole Terry Ellis from USA Today. I was just wondering if someone could provide more details on the Voting Rights Advancement Act and how that's going to stop the mass closure of polling places.
Sure. This is Lee Chapman, Voting Rights Program Director at the Leadership Conference. So the Voting Rights Advancement Act, or H.R. 4, is a bill that's actually moving through Congress right now. There was a hearing today on current conditions of racial discrimination. So the bill does a few things. It looks at states that have had voting rights violations over the last 25 years. And states that have recent history of voter discrimination would be required to pre-clear their voting changes either to the Department of Justice or a federal court in D.C. It also includes a provision called the Known Practices Coverage Provision, which would require local jurisdictions that have a large number of racial minorities or language minorities to have voting changes pre-cleared. There's six of them, and one of them is polling place closure. So, and that's nationwide coverage. So anywhere in the country, if there's a jurisdiction that has at least 20% racial minority or language minority, they would have to have their polling place changes pre-cleared by the DOJ or a federal court. There's also nationwide transparency provisions and notice requirements. So when jurisdictions have voting changes, they're required to post them on the Internet so the public can know about them before elections.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Elizabeth Crisp. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hi. My question is for Ms. Gupta. I was kind of curious what you thought about today's hearing. I know that obviously there was some Republican pushback. One of my congressmen from Louisiana is actually Ranking Member Johnson, so I was just kind of curious how you thought things went today and what kind of stood out to you, if anything.
Sure. You know, it was interesting. The hearing, I thought, was a pretty good discussion. There was a lot less pushback, to be honest with you, than I would have anticipated. It is true that Ranking Member Johnson opened up, you know, criticizing what he called disparate impact of the Voting Rights Act, which I just thought was an ahistorical understanding of the fact that in 1982, under President Reagan's watch, President Reagan actually signed a bill that put in the ability to challenge changes in voting and election practices that have created a disparate effect, and that it was something that was put in explicitly to ensure that the Voting Rights Act could do its work without legislators feeling like they were being called out as being racist in enacting voting changes. And so there was pushback against Ranking Member Johnson's assertion on that. But all in all, it was interesting. There was members of the panel, Republicans, who were joining the Democrats in saying that there needs to be a recognition that there continues to be a problem in racial discrimination in voting. And the question, and some of those members actually voted for the Voting Rights Act, including Representative Gohmert and from Texas in 2006. And so the question will be, what will they vote today, you know, when this bill goes before them for a vote. But I thought the discussion overall was good. It was important to get all of this information on the record, particularly because there were other witnesses, my colleagues, who were testifying about the legions of documents and evidence documenting current-day contemporary racial discrimination in voting around the country that's been obtained through lengthy litigation taking place from all over the country in the last few years.
And our next question comes from Mike Ludwig with a follow-up. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thanks. I was going to ask about the hearing. I appreciate you going into that. But I'm wondering, I'm just kind of fishing for some solid quotes here. This report looks at a huge swath of
the country, and a lot of different instances. And as you all have said, not all these changes are necessarily harmful, but they very well could be, and it's hard to tell. What can we tell the readers that they can walk away from this report? Is there a specific instance, particularly maybe beyond Randolph County, that we can point to and say, here's an example of this living on today, or here's an example of a community where polling closures were, you know, had an obvious effect on the ability to access the polls? Or is there just a big picture kind of takeaway that we should be discussing as a country when it comes to accessing the ballot?
So this is Vanita Gupta again. I'd like to pass it to Lee Chapman, who helped author the report, but I just want to say I think it's we can provide a lot of information on all of those points that you raised. There are specific examples, you know, in Nueces County, Texas, which is 63% Latino, has a clear record of problems with the Voting Rights Act compliance. Since Shelby, it's closed 37 polling places in its shift to vote centers, going from 121 voting locations in 2012 to 84 in 2018. And the reduction occurred against a backdrop of the county also failing to provide voting information in Spanish during the 2016 election, which is a violation of its still binding commitment under the Voting Rights Act. There were a number of incidents that had happened in this county prior that just, you know, created systematic discrimination, and we go into that in some detail in our report. There are a lot of other specific instances. You mentioned Randolph County, but there were others in out of Georgia and out of some of the kind of high violators and high closers, mega closers, as we call them, in the report. But also there are top lines, and part of the issue that, I mean, kind of a big top line issue is a lot of these closures are happening in states that had preclearance before, and there's a real lack of notice to voters and a lack of study, which had been obligated under the Voting Rights Act, the preclearance regime, around the racial impact of these closures. And I think all of this, combined with these states also enacting other restrictive barriers to the vote, paint a picture of contemporary kind of modern-day discrimination in voting that that we should abhor as a democracy. And Lee, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that.
Thanks, Vanita. Yeah, so I would just add that, you know, our democracy works best when everyone can fully participate, no matter who they are, what their race or color. And voting should be made easier, not harder, which means we should be making voting as accessible as possible. We should not have a system where people's polling places are moved or closed without their knowledge, or where voters have to wait in long lines for hours in order to vote. And our report, Democracy Diverted, raises important questions about how state and local officials are making decisions about polling places that must be answered to ensure our democracy is working for all of us. And if you want to hear more about Randolph County, you know, I think Sean Young, who, you know, ACLU Georgia was really leading those efforts on the ground, he can provide an example of what happened on the ground there.
Hi, this is Sean Young with the ACLU of Georgia. We caught wind of Randolph County. So let me take a step back. Randolph County is in the Black Belt and is 60% African American, and it had 9 polling places up until last year, when we got last-minute notice that the Board of Elections was proposing to close 7 out of 9 of those polling places. They didn't give an explanation right away or respond to our open records request. When we came down to Randolph and spoke at the hearing, it was revealed that the closures were the brainchild of someone named Mike Malone, a consultant that he claims came recommended by the Secretary of State. And Mike Malone proceeded to show a PowerPoint presentation lecturing the community about the importance of closing polling places and disparaging the nature of the facilities of the polling places that he was proposing to close. For the very first time, at least in my experience, I heard the justification put forward as being ADA compliance. And at that meeting, I explained that the way you comply with the ADA is by complying with the ADA. And Mr. Malone also took the time to brag about his polling place recommendations in 10 other counties, 9 out of 10 of which were disproportionately African American. After this public outcry, the county and the county's attorney decided to fire Mike Malone and really do the right thing and vote down these polling place closures. But if we had not heard about this closure, we wouldn't have noticed this happening, and it would have moved forward because elections officials are so used to people not noticing what they're doing. In another county, which got a lot less media attention when we worked in that county, is Irwin County in Georgia, known for housing one of the most despicable immigration detention centers in America. But in that county, there are three polling places, and the Board of Elections proposed to close the only polling place that was in a black neighborhood. The polling place they tried to close was in the middle of Irwin County, and thus the most convenient for everyone in that county. But they wanted to close it and keep open two polling places in 99% white neighborhoods, including a polling place that is located in Jefferson Davis Memorial Park. Their recommended closures went directly against a nonpartisan county association recommendation concerning polling places, and they gave no explanation for why they were deviating from the nonpartisan analysis. It was only after the ACLU of Georgia went down and shined a spotlight on this discriminatory act that they finally relented. And we also had to act in Fulton County, where they were trying to close polling places in 80% plus African American neighborhoods. And so the whack-a-mole game referred to earlier, the whack-a-mole game is very much alive here in Georgia.
And we'll move on to the next question. We have a follow-up question from Elizabeth Crisp. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was kind of curious, when I asked the Louisiana Secretary of State about these findings, he kind of came back with citing, he said that all of the parishes are Help America Vote Act compliant, and so he felt confident in what's going on in Louisiana because of that. I was curious, because I haven't heard Haba mention much, how that plays into all of this.
This is Michelle with the National Disability Rights Network. I could speak to that a little bit. The Help America Vote Act is not really about polling places and architectural access in that sense. It's more about the voting equipment itself. The issue that we're seeing more with polling place closures is a lack of compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act because those are the basic architectural standards. That's where we're talking about parking spaces, paths of travel, doorways, the actual setup of the polling place itself. HAVA is a little more restricted to the actual voting equipment, so I think it's somewhat of a misunderstanding in terms of the accessibility of polling places. The type of equipment that you use, that's more regulated by HAVA, is a factor in the accessibility, but it doesn't require closure or relocation of a polling place. That would really fall to the ADA, where it's going to be talking about those architectural access standards. So I think that's a really interesting response. It might be, as we've seen, a bit of a misunderstanding of access law. And that's really common in the world of elections. That's why the number one thing that we stress is to speak with the disability rights community when you're making these types of decisions to make sure that you understand what laws apply, how they apply, and how to come into full compliance while also making sure that you're setting your elections up in a way that are going to be accessible for all voters, with and without disabilities. We need polling places to be adequate in number, located near public transit, located near population centers, where everyone's going to be able to reach them, but everyone's also going to be able to physically get into them and access them at the same time. So really, typically, this is more of an ADA issue. I'm not sure exactly what HAVA would have called up in their response, but we would be happy to speak with them as well.
And that's all the questions we have at this time. Would the speakers like to make any final comments?
This is Kristen Voorhees from the Leadership Conference Education Fund. I just wanted to thank everybody for joining our call. audio will be available of this call in the coming hours. And if you have any additional questions, please feel free to email us at press@civilrights.org. Thanks again.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may all now disconnect.